The best catechism might just be Dad's willingness to be a hugger, to spend one-on-one time with our kids, and to be willing to really listen when they want to talk. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Welcome to Stories from the Heart. I'm your host, Sandra McDevitt. Today, a young doctor makes a decision which will haunt him the rest of his life. Plus, the feelings a small baby must have while in his mother's womb. A lifelong regret. I remember very few of the thousands of babies I've delivered, but I'll never forget the baby I killed. Jim stared at his favorite professor in bewilderment. The long, jagged scar on Dr. Riley's cheek, the mark of a boyhood coasting accident, stood out, red and angry looking against the whiteness of his hair and the pallor of his skin. "Yes, Jim," the doctor continued, "I performed an abortion." "I don't understand, Dr. Ed." "It's not pleasant to disillusion you, son. Your respect, your friendship has meant a great deal to me. I hope I haven't lost it." "You could not, Dr. Ed. Whatever you did, there must have been a good reason." "Oh, there was a reason, all right. A pretty shallow one. I've never told this story before. God knows I've thought of it. Almost 30 years and the child I killed still haunts me." The ticking of the clock in the big lecture room was loud in Jim's ears. Dr. Riley rose from his desk and crossed to the window. For a long time he looked out over the campus, his hands clenched behind his back. At last he turned, his lips set on a thin, straight line. Slowly he walked back to his chair. His voice was low and controlled. "My first patient, Jim, was one of the loveliest young girls I've ever seen. She was 2 months pregnant and scared. She wanted to get rid of the baby. The man, I never knew his name, was a young engineer. He'd been sent to Central America and wasn't to return for 2 years. Then they were to be married. She couldn't go to him. No country for a woman, particularly not a woman in her condition. She was suffering. She hated what she was contemplating doing, but she couldn't face the disgrace. Her family, his, both of them society folks, cream of the crop. I'd waited months in the shabby little office for a patient, Jim, but there was only one thing I could do, tell her to have the baby. I didn't think I'd ever see her again. A week went by, and my only callers were creditors, healthy ones. I was frantic with worry when one day the girl came back. She was the point of hysteria. Her parents had taken the younger children on a holiday and were to return to the city in 2 weeks. She must have sensed the hopelessness of my situation. She was clever. She offered me one more thing. A practice. She would tell her friends about the new doctor who had cured her of something. We could concoct a story. May God forgive me, Jim, I did it. The one unethical thing I've ever done. The thing I can never forget. The girl kept her word. In a year and a half, I was able to pay my debts and had the beginning of an excellent practice. But I couldn't take it any longer. I accepted a residency in a hospital some distance away. It wasn't much of a job, but I had to get away and try to forget the girl, what I had done to her and to myself. Soon I went to obstetrics. Somehow I felt I must atone. I must deliver babies and still more babies, but the thousands couldn't make up for that forgotten one. Finally, I decided to teach, training doctors, many doctors to deliver many more babies. That has been my attempt at expiation, And you, Jim, seem to me the finest of the lot, the most promising young doctor of all. It was hard to have an ideal shattered. Jim knew he would never feel quite the same toward Dr. Riley. "Why have you told me all this, Dr. Ed?" he asked. "After so long, it does seem I might have kept still a while longer, doesn't it? But when you told me of Bennett's offer, I knew it would mean you'd be lost to obstetrics. Bennett's a good man, one of the best. If you want to do a general work at City Hospital, you'll follow in his footsteps. Selfishly, I want you in obstetrics. Surgery, obstetrics, pediatrics, one field of medicine is just about as important as the other, isn't it? Maybe, I don't know. But I do know how badly we need men in obstetrics who are incorruptible. Today, Jim, it isn't just girls full of shame. It's selfish married women as well who seek out doctors to help them commit murder. It's hard for me to imagine women like that, Dr. Ed," Jim frowned. "I've never known women who didn't want children. My father was an only child, but mother was the oldest of six children. My aunts and uncles were always presenting me with new little cousins. We love kids in our family. Mom would like to have had a dozen, but she couldn't have any, so they adopted me. How would your mother take a switch to brain surgery after all your plans?" "I'm not sure. I'm going to talk to her about it this afternoon." "Then she managed to come out for graduation after all?" "Yes. I'm meeting her in front of the building. Johnny's scarlet fever turned out to be just an old-fashioned sore throat. Those kids really keep Mom in a dither." Dr. Riley smiled. "Your mother must be a remarkable woman, Jim. Her friends think she's crazy, but she's, well, quite a gal. The kids give her something to think about. Most rich widows have a hobby of some sort. I like Mom's orphans a lot better than bridge or poodles or raising orchids. I'll be eager to know how she reacts to Bennett's offer." "Oh, I don't suppose she'll care too much, really, what kind of doctor I become. It's just that we talked about obstetrics. Mom always said she thought bringing life into the world was the most wonderful thing she could ever think of. But brain surgery, the delicacy of the operation, the precision, that's what fascinates me, Dr. Ed." The young man's eyes glowed. Dr. Riley sighed and began to straighten his desk. "Well, Jim," he said, "whatever kind of doctor you become, I know you'll be a good doctor. I'll admit, I've tried to influence you, and I'm still trying. This is my last graduating class, Jim. I'm through. Coronary thrombosis. A few more months at the most. I'd like the idea of your carrying on for me, son. So now you know. Let's forget it and get out of here. Nothing so gloomy as an empty classroom." There was nothing Jim could say. There were no words. Dr. Riley locked his desk, and the two met and walked down the deserted corridors. Jim's throat felt tight and choked. As they stepped out into the bright sunshine, Jim tried desperately to control his emotions. His mother stood waiting for him at the foot of the long steps. "Sorry to be late, Mom," he called, running down the steps. "I was talking to Dr. Ed. I want you to meet him." Slowly, Dr. Riley came down the steps, his head bowed, his hand on the railing. For the first time, Jim noticed that he moved like an old man. "Of course I want to meet your Dr. Ed," she smiled. But as she looked directly into the doctor's scarred face, her smile vanished. For a moment, she stared at him, almost in horror. "Good afternoon, Dr. Riley." Her voice seemed not quite steady. Then she turned to her son. "I knew Dr. Riley years ago, Jim," she said, "when we were first very young. In fact, I was his first patient."
I had a dream the other night. Never had a dream like it. So profound, so troubling, I I woke up trembling, in tears. In my dream, I heard a child, a baby, speaking to me so clearly, but almost in a whisper. Somehow I knew this child was full of primal joy at being newly alive. I felt deeply that child's reverence and awe at the discovery of its own existence, and I shared the excitement. But then I heard another voice, and another, and soon there seemed to be thousands, I don't know, maybe millions. They were all in various stages of development, all grateful for life, all singing the same urgent chorus, the same fervent plea. And I realized, though, each and every one of those children was already experiencing life. Not one had yet been born.
I'm 1 month old. I'm very small. I feel me growing every day. In this warm, dark place, my heart is the biggest part of me, and it's beating. I'm so glad to be alive.
Fingers and toes, my own mouth, my own lips, and I'm 2 months old today. My heart is beating fast, and I feel another heart, big and strong, somewhere. All around me. Is that my mother?
Can you feel it? I can turn my head, I can squint and frown and make a fist. See, I can curl my nose. And I think my mother knows I'm here. I'm alive. I'm alive.
I woke up then, and I knew I was hearing something real. Thousands of unborn children were singing to me from their mother's wombs. And they're not just mindless bits of flesh. They're human beings already in touch with their mothers, with God, with life. They deserve to live.
Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Today's story was written by Dorothy Graham.